Good afternoon, my friends. Today we have a special program from the chair. I am here with a group of college students who I've gotten together to talk about their experience as college students, by and large, in a secular atmosphere. How, in fact, their studies have been impacted by the faith, how in fact, do they live their faith in the midst of their studies, and how do they see the relationship between the two. We are recording this for this later broadcast, but I'm happy to be here, and I welcome all of the students. They are, by and large, from the Ohio State University, are they not? Very good. So, well, welcome to you, and thank you for joining us for this program. I had been speaking to them before we began the program about the church's long interest in a faith that seeks understanding, a faith that wants to know itself better, more widely, and deeper in their life. So I thought it'd be wonderful to talk with people who are very much immersed in that kind of atmosphere. I've often said that a college life, especially on the undergraduate level, is one of the few opportunities that an individual has to really go intensively and very intentionally into the life of the mind and into the importance of understanding, both to our faith and to our human dignity. So I welcome again all of you, and I'd like to begin simply by asking a general question of you. What are you studying? Now, ever since I was an undergraduate, actually, that was a number of years ago. I'll admit to that. But as an undergraduate, all of us at the college took the same courses for the first 2 years. We did not declare a major until the end of our sophomore year. So there was a very, very tight intellectual and social community in our college. This is quite different now. When I went off to college, my older brother said to me, "Computers." Now, I looked at him and I said, "Oh, this is science fiction. This is crazy." Well, he just retired and he still's laughing at me. But I'd like to ask you, just kind of introduce yourselves and tell us a little about what field you may be involved. Yeah.
My name's Emily Bauer. I'm a junior in chemical engineering at Ohio State.
My name is Zach Conti. I'm a graduating senior studying public policy and management.
Very good.
My name is Jeff Kroc. I'm a senior studying strategic communication, which I always have to explain because no one knows what it is, but it's just an umbrella term for the fields of public relations and advertising.
Okay.
Hi, I'm Tim Hughes. I'm actually a first-year missionary here at Ohio State University with the Newman Center and St. Paul's Outreach. Okay. But I went to Seton Hall University and studied theology, philosophy, and classical studies.
My name is Jason Brunswick. I'm a fourth year here at The Ohio State University. I'm majoring in philosophy, and I have a minor in humanitarian engineering.
My name is Chella Masso-Rivetti. I'm a second year here at OSU. I study anthropology, which broadly is the study of humanity, and I focus specifically on cultural anthropology.
Very good.
Hi, my name is Caitlin Toth. I'm a sophomore here at The Ohio State University. I am a double major, international studies, political science, with a minor in Arabic on a pre-law track.
Hi, my name is Donald Bleasdale. I'm a junior studying chemical engineering with a minor in Spanish.
Very good.
My name is Andrew Nonsengzi. I'm a senior in chemical engineering.
Hello, everyone. My name is Matthew Schechter. I'm a third year junior studying neuroscience.
Hi, I'm Madison Callahan, and I am a sophomore studying nursing.
Hello, I'm Patrick Esguerra, and I'm a junior studying psychology with a minor in professional writing.
Oh, very good. Well, very interesting. I've noticed some majors that are absolutely new to me. because as an undergraduate, you just majored in the various, well, let me call them classic majors. Now the technical world seems to have really expanded. But let me ask you, what is your idea of the purpose of education? If you had to describe it or define it for someone, how would you do this? Here you are, obviously, from all sorts of various majors, but more generally, how would you describe the purpose of your education? Okay.
I guess I would just describe education as a way to prepare yourself for the future, whether that's your future career goals or that's your future moral understanding, so education of the faith or education of just whatever technical field you're going to go into.
Okay. Anyone else?
Yeah, as a philosophy major, I see education as a way to search for the truth, whether that's in very specific fields or more broadly. And I think it's skewed a little bit at big universities like Ohio State, because I think most people see it as just a way to get a degree so you can make money in the future. So I don't think we value it intrinsically as we ought to.
Okay.
I see education as a way to strengthen your abilities to help people. So, for example, in chemical engineering, what I know about pressure and volume and temperature and all the different reactions that go on can really help me to make sure that people are safe in chemical engineering environments, that we're not having big explosions or anything like that. So that's for me in my major, but you also have like nursing or even public policy, where if you really understand what's good for other people, then you can actually do what's good for other people.
Okay. Anybody else? Well, then let me ask you, what do you feel is the relationship between what you are studying and what you believe? That is, between the faith and what's happening in, say, the classroom or in professional life in general. Have you thought about this? Good. Jeff?
I've thought about this quite a bit, because it's often been a struggle for me being in a major where I'm talking about marketing and public relations, and how do I relate that to my faith and, you know, what's happening in my prayer. But I think what it comes down to is, as Christians, as Catholics, we're called to do all things for the greater glory of God, and that means doing all things really well and excellently. And that's where my education has really pushed me to grow in my faith, is challenging me to take on tasks that are difficult or challenging and do them well with the mindset of doing them for the Lord and for His glory.
Yeah, okay. Anyone else?
I kind of see it as a threefold reality where truth, when we're talking about truth, I think that the purpose of education, one of the purposes is to find the truth. And if we look at like who truth is, God is truth himself. And then there's a second fold of, well, there is a practical to the fact that we're going to be living in our vocations as chemical engineers, as scientists, as businessmen, or whatever it ends up being. And the world needs good financial advisors who are Catholic. Mm-hmm. And so making sure to bring our faith into our work environment, because having a CEO who is practicing good moral standards and experiencing a relationship with God is really important. And then I think threefold also to help on mission. I think that every major in some way ties back to helping others. And I think that every major will help society as a whole. And doing that through the lens of Christianity, I think, seeing God in others is pretty significant.
Yeah, right. And Matthew.
Yeah, and I think, like, along with all that, if I'm answering what's the difference between what I believe and what I'm seeing in and what college and in education right now, is like there's a big like gap for me, at least, in my pursuit of knowledge and like the pursuit of like how that is supposed to be incorporated in my being. And I think like when I'm on campus and I'm seeing all these people like live like very radically different lives than I am as a Christian, as a Catholic, it like comes at odds like when I don't see the development of a character in like a college setting. So I think the one thing that I'm struggling with more so than anything is seeing the pursuit of knowledge, but not a pursuit of, yeah, developing of morals, development of character, the development of like the actual person.
Yeah. You know, I think that that's an important point, because, Jason, you mentioned about philosophy and the search for truth. I know a lot of modern philosophy is very analytical, dealing with very precise questions, things like certainty or promising or something like that. But philosophy originally came about as a way of seeking a way of living well. That philosophy was considered a pattern of behavior, so that you had to begin with the understanding that the pursuit of truth is also associated with moral excellence and not simply intellectual excellence. And I think we've kind of lost that sense of philosophy and the search for truth. You know, there are many paths to the truth, but there's only one source of truth, and that is God himself. But the paths to that truth are, and the participation in it, are all really very unique in their way, but they have to be integrated. And I think that's one of the challenges, and you pointed this out, that there is a very close relationship between intellectual excellence and moral excellence. And that, I think, is the great challenge. Well, what specific challenges do you see in your own fields? And now, yes, Madison, you are in nursing. Are you not? What kinds of challenges do you find there? Because so often it's in the health professions mm-hmm. that many of these moral and ethical questions arise.
So personally, I feel like I've seen a lot of people enter the nursing field for almost the wrong reasons, it seems like. They see a stable job, which they can earn pretty good money and retire well off of. I've seen an increase in people who don't do it for the moral reasons. They don't see the humanity in people. They go to do their job and only their job. I grew up with a father who is a very strong Catholic and has been a nurse for over 20 years. Mm-hmm. And he was always talked about how the moral part of Catholicism has helped him be a better nurse, because you see the humanity in every single person that comes in through the door, no matter their story, no matter their age, and you're going to help them no matter what with the same level of effort as you would the person previous. Mm-hmm. So definitely going into the nursing field, I've seen that where there has been a lack, but I've also experienced amazing people who are entering the nursing profession for the right reasons and to help everybody, because they see the humanity, they see God in everybody, and just to carry out his work.
Right. Yeah. Well, most of you are far too young to have had a very lengthy experience with the medical profession. Yet, it'll come. But I think you may have experienced that you automatically know when, you say, you're being examined or there's a diagnosis being done, whether in fact you are being treated as a person or as a symptom. And that, I think, is a very clear example of how you are confronted with how important the ethical questions are and the moral questions. That you mentioned in chemical engineering that you really don't want things to blow up. What kind of, say, ethical training do you get in engineering specifically on this? Because I can think of cases. Remember Bhopal in India?
Yes.
Where they haven't. Do you have any ethical training in this?
Yes, so we have to take an ethics course, actually. So I took a philosophy and an engineering ethics course. But in addition, ethics is kind of built into our unit operations class, which is our senior class where we learn about, you know, heat exchangers, distillation columns, and we actually do experiments with them. Part of the course is learning about Bhopal and other tragedies like that, and watching videos, and it just really hit. They really try to make it hit home for us that, I mean, there's lives in our hands, and to do our job well means keeping people safe. We had to do an ethics assignment. So they didn't have as much ethics built into the coursework in the past, but they're really putting more emphasis on it now.
Okay. Yes. That's good to hear about it. Yeah. So I think that we want to break now to hear from our sponsors. So we will be right back with another segment of the forum.
Hi, Vince DeAndrea from Miracle Motor Mart. Miracle was selected as National Independent Quality Dealer, and I'd like to share a letter from one of our customers. Dan says, "Having known Mike DeAndrea and his staff for well over 30 years, I can attest to their quality customer service and their commitment to delivering an unmatched customer experience. I have personally purchased my last 10 vehicles from Miracle Motor Mart, and if my extended family is included, that number jumps up to over 28. Dan goes on to say that Miracle is fair, knowledgeable, and removes any apprehension that may exist when making such an important purchase. Finally, he adds, "I live well over 100 miles away from their two locations in Columbus, and it's worth the trip. Sincerely, Daniel Horgan, Mayor of Akron, Ohio." Thanks, Dan. This is Vince DeAndrea from Miracle Motor Mart, and you can call me personally at 614-774-2287. Miracle Motor Mart, where we treat everybody like the mayor.
Is it time to change the flooring in your home? Then you owe it to yourself to check out Evans Carpet Junkyard. Family owned and operated for 53 years, Evans Carpet offers a large selection of quality carpet, remnants, and flooring at great prices. Evans also offers binding for those comfortable area rugs. Stop by their spacious 20,000 square foot facility at 665 North Hague Avenue off of 70 West and stroll through the large inventory of in-stock flooring that's available for quick installations. Visit carpetjunkyard.com today. Evans Carpet Junkyard, quality carpet at junkyard prices.
Ever been out at a restaurant and noticed the people at another table all looking at their smartphones? The world has changed, and the majority of internet searches are now mobile. If you own a business, give RevLocal a call to review your strategy so you reach new customers. At RevLocal, we personalize digital marketing to help you reach the people who need you. RevLocal, an Inc. 500 company for the past 5 years. Learn more at RevLocal.com.
Did you know that your body has a theology? Man is made to love woman, and woman is made to love man. We see it imprinted in our very bodies. Take me, for example. I walk, talk, and act very differently from my husband. Yet we both know instinctively that we are persons. Pope St. John Paul II says that our body as male and female makes us aware that we are meant as gift to each other. We are meant to love as God loves, as Adam and Eve loved before they knew shame. They were shameless, not only in the sense of their physical bodies, but spiritually as well. Theirs was a total gift of self. We too are meant to be a total gift of self in all that we say or do in our relationships. This is the spousal meaning of the body. We are created for union, in particular for marriage. For more on the theology of the body, you can find us at creativecatholicworks.org.
Hi, my name is Jason Brunswick, a fourth year at The Ohio State University. Welcome back to the College Forum with Bishop Campbell on St. Gabriel Catholic Radio, AM 820.
Thank you, Jason. Welcome back to all of you. We're here talking about the experience on the college campus of integrating a faith life and the life of the intellect and the academy. But I want to begin by asking the students a question that has kind of both interested me and plagued me for a long time. And I began by quoting someone who I think has justifiably been forgotten in history, but wrote a very influential book at the beginning of the 20th century that he called The Decline of the West. And in that book, his name was Alvald Spengler. He made an interesting point. He believed that he had found the secret to determining how cultures grow, how they decline, and he thought it was an inevitable historical process. But he said something that struck me. And you know, he wrote so much that he was bound to say something that was true. So he said that one of the signs of the decline of a culture is that the brightest minds turn exclusively to technological concerns and abandon the humanities. Do you think that's true? Or what is it that might explain really the decline of interest in the humanities? Yeah. Or has it even occurred to you? Yeah. Oh, Matthew, yeah.
So I, as like a hard science major studying neuroscience, like there's a weird dichotomy between like the humanitarian like general education classes I have to take and like my actual major coursework, because I was for a long time on a pre-med track. So that was just like a huge like organic chemistry, biochem, like all this stuff where it's just like very just almost just like you're like a machine learning. But there are a couple courses that I took on like modernity and stuff like that and like how we view the world versus how it was viewed beforehand. And I was really like struck by the mindset that in this modern context that we live, we kind of don't understand the past anymore. We don't understand what an ancient mindset would have been like. We don't understand like knowledge compared to what we think knowledge is right now. And this is like really abstract. I apologize if it doesn't make sense. But it's like very concerning because we're so skeptical about knowledge in general that we don't really consider things in the past to be true compared to what science says is true now. And obviously there are some cases where that could be the truth, but the lack of concern for history, I think, is tying back to what you were asking about, is like the big concern for me.
Well, I would applaud that, having been a history major. But, you know, I began actually in mathematics. But I've noticed how, in fact, technology seems to be affecting the sciences as well. How in our high school curricula, the emphasis is not on pure mathematics, which is essential, say, to physics, but upon how mathematics can be integrated into engineering, that is, to drive it to a particular point, a utilitarian point. And I notice this in the pure sciences as well. At least that's my impression. Now, obviously, some of you are in the technical fields. Let me ask you two questions. For those who went into the technical fields, what drew you to them? Yeah.
My name is Jason Brunswick. I spent 2 years in mechanical engineering before changing to philosophy, so I've kind of seen both worlds. Mm-hmm. And I very much so agree. I think our brightest minds go towards technology fields. I think there's a twofold reason for that. I think the first one is our culture is so materialistically driven that everybody wants the prestige, the money, and the job security that goes with the technology fields. And the other one is I think there's just a decline in views of objective morality, of objective truth. I often, when I meet with old engineering friends, they'll laugh at me for studying philosophy now. They think it's a joke. They think that humanities are pretty worthless to study because you're not going to make money studying them. You're not going to have a secure job. And so I see that as a big issue in our culture, as a much grander problem. And this is simply a symptom of what we see.
Yeah. Anyone else? Now, there are some other technical. Dan?
I know. My name is Donald. As an engineering major, I know I see a lot of people who just loathe their gen ed classes, like your sociology, philosophy kind of stuff. And I think it's very goal oriented, very focused on, like, what is this going to do for me in the future? Because, like, you hear about, like, in England, how degrees are 3 years and people can get out faster so they can make money. And I think it's all very goal-oriented and not thinking, like, how can this form me as a person? And I think just as Catholics having that root in our faith, we get a lot of that ethics training from the church. And I think that's a really helpful thing that a lot of people can really use from their education that they're just not getting. I know as for why I chose engineering, it very much was that goal-focused thing because I want to be able to just support a family well and sciences have been an interesting thing to me in the past.
Which is noble, you know, to make a contribution to society, to do work that is both valuable and interesting to you, rather than to become a drudge. But, you know, we have to be careful, I think, when we talk about education, that we don't so emphasize education as getting a job, because that really reduces the dignity of the human person. If we look at a person simply by what he or she can produce, then we see them only as producers, not as persons, individual persons. And I think that's a real problem in our society today. Yeah, go ahead, Shayla.
Yeah, hi, I'm Chella. I'd like to speak as a counterexample because I am in the social sciences, so that's very different from these technical fields we've been hearing about. So I'm a cultural anthropology major again, and I cannot think of a single person I know in cultural anthropology who has entered that field for the money, for the fame, for the glory.
Right.
Those are not things that exist in cultural anthropology, not to any degree. So everybody in my field, I mean, I'm making a generalization there, but most people I know in my field are in this field to serve other people. So there are still some humanities out there, and I would say we are definitely in decline, and job prospects are in decline. But one thing that really sets humanity apart from other species in general is our vast ability to care for one another and our empathy and sympathy for each other. So that's why I think earlier you were speaking about really like the decline of society happens when the decline of the humanities happens as well. And I think that's because we're losing the ability to use that empathy and sympathy and reach out toward each other and focus only on our own personal gains. But I think there are still some fields out there, and I think cultural anthropology is one of them. And I think some of the other people in this room are studying similar things, but we're definitely seeing a split in how people view education. Yeah.
Oh, yes. Yeah, between education as utility or education as growth, as a human person, yeah. Yes, please. I think it's on.
Hi, I'm Zach. I'm studying public policy and management. As well as Chella, I also would be considered in a social science, although we do apply technical methods to policy analysis. I think it's worth, in one of my courses, Labor Economics and Industrial Relations, we've talked about what I think might be a very significant root cause of this issue. And what we've observed is stagnating wages for all earners except for the very wealthiest. And so we live in a society with extraordinary wealth inequality. And what this is leading to is this rat race for most of us to try and cobble together a quality of life based on lower wages, of course, stagnated wages, but the cost of living has gone up. And so, you know, there's this very significant pressure to earn and earn more while we're dealing with less, especially for folks who are the most vulnerable in our society.
Right.
And so it is very unfortunate, certainly, that we do see this very extreme goal-oriented as in make a lot of money. And I think that there's two sides to that. Certainly there's the side of, you know, what are we doing as a society to curb unbridled greed? Are we speaking out as church? Unfortunately, I think that even a lot of folks who are steeped in the life of the church can get caught up in that as well. Are we open to a life of simplicity? Are we open to consuming less and damaging the environment less as well? But also, do we get caught up in the flashiness of American culture? We have a culture that thrives on flashing name brands, buying the bigger house, having the nicer car. What are we doing as church to say no to that? Or are we getting, are we complicit in that as well? And I think that it's very important for us to consider the influence of wealth and greed in where we are at as a society, not only in education, but in every facet of our lives.
Yeah.
My name is Jason. I'm a philosophy major, and one thing I've studied before is that it's not so much the wealth that matters, but the relative wealth in America to others. So if I have a house, if it's a round house is smaller than me, on average, I'm going to be much happier. But if I'm in a nice neighborhood and it's the smallest house, I'm going to be very distraught by that. So I think it's the relative wealth that people are so caught up on. I spent 2 weeks in Ghana on a humanitarian engineering trip and 2 weeks in Calcutta, India this past summer. Some of the poorest places I've ever seen, but they were so much more joyful than we are in America. They see that there's something beyond wealth that brings happiness and joy, and I think that's something we've lost as a culture today.
Jason, you're in philosophy. Have you ever dealt with the question of being versus doing?
Quite a bit.
Okay.
In our cultures, we don't understand doing anymore. It's all, or we don't understand being anymore,
yeah.
Excuse me. It's all about what we do and the jobs we have.
Yeah. And would I be far wrong to say that this is a crucial point about the human person? What is more important, that what you are or what you do? And that, because even great wealth can be dehumanizing. It can twist the personality. I read an essay recently on the character of our culture and the dangers it faces. It said, you know, the culture has produced a situation where, by and large, there is a great relief from material want, from health issues and whatnot. We live in a culture that, in which even our poor lived better than 90% of the people who lived at the time of Jesus. And a Catholic novelist once asked, in a culture so rich, so protective, why are so many people unhappy? you know, it's understanding what it means to be a human person, not only for ourselves, but for our others, our relations with others, being over doing. And I don't care what field you're studying, I think you want to keep this in the back of the mind. How is my human dignity being enhanced and preserved and protected? And how am I doing that for others? Yeah. So, no, I think that is important. And I'm not so naive as to suspect that a lot of the people go into certain fields because they want to make a good living. And that is not on the surface of it a wrong thing to want. But when do you say to yourself, what is enough? When has it become so overwhelming that every other aspect of human life, from happiness to the enjoyment of social communication, and I mean actual communication, not through things, not through machines, but actually talking to people and being with them. So I think it's a critical question for people of faith to not only think about it and speak about it, but actually live it as an example to others. So, well, why don't we take a break now, and we'll be back. We'll hear from our sponsors, and we'll be right back. Thank you.
If you know of someone addicted to opioids, LifeSpring Recovery can help. LifeSpring Recovery is an outpatient opioid treatment center with board-certified addiction specialists, physicians, and counselors. LifeSpring Recovery addresses the medical and behavioral needs of the addicted, including drug testing and weekly follow-ups. LifespringRecovery.com. That's LifespringRecovery.com.
Did you know that your body has a theology? God Himself is communion of three persons, the Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. Picture this. God pours out all of Himself to Jesus, and Jesus receives that gift and returns it back to the Father. This eternal relationship is love, and we call that the Holy Spirit. We are destined to share in that exchange. Where do we see proof of this? Marriage. Marital union of man and woman reflects God's inner life. Man gives himself totally to the woman. She receives his gift and gives it back to him. This exchange is love in action, and by its very nature, it is creative, as new life is possible. Beginning with the book of Genesis and ending with Revelation, God makes it very clear. He wants to unite with us. For more on the theology of the body, you can find us at creativecatholicworks.org.
This is a Young Catholic Minute. What's wrong with girl watching? God made them pretty on purpose, right?
Yes, He definitely did, because He wants us to be attracted to them, attracted enough to love them, to enter into marriage, and to give up our lives for them. But is that what girl watching is?
Nope.
You know what it is?
Yep, girl watching is a sure ticket to never really becoming a man. Real men love heroically, with commitment and sacrifice. And when they see true beauty, they serve it. They don't try to make it serve them. What if Aragorn in Lord of the Rings had gone chasing after that blonde girl? Or maybe just for a little while? No, Aragorn knew that even a little girl watching would make him a boy and prevent him from doing the manly tasks before him. The ring would never have gotten destroyed, he'd never be king, and he'd never marry his queen. For more, go to youtube.com/youngcatholic.
Hi, I'm Cella Massa-Rovetti, a second year at The Ohio State University. Welcome back to the College Forum with Bishop Campbell on St. Gabriel Catholic Radio, AM 820.
Welcome back. I'm happy to be here with these college students and talk about some really fundamental questions that touch very deeply upon our human life, on who we are, how we define ourselves, where we are going. And I think these are critical questions, especially in a culture that has become more and more technologically savvy, but also disoriented because of it. And so I'd like to continue our conversation about this. I will tell people that during our break, and saying something like that makes me feel like someone on a television talk show. During our break, we had a really interesting discussion. But we were talking about the fact that we lose a good part of our sense of our humanity by being overwhelmed by defining ourselves by what we do, how useful we are. And I'd like to talk a little about how do we address that issue? How do you see it both forceful in our lives And how might it be overcome in everything we do? Well, let me ask a question to kind of get it over. When you are asked, what are you doing? What do you respond? You know, people ask a lot of that. When I was in high school, people would say, well, what do you want to do when you grow up? The question should have been, what do you want to be when you grow up? But yeah, go ahead, Tim.
I think it was the philosopher Hegel who very acutely noticed when he was 12 that he wasn't hungry. He wasn't thirsty. He would say, I am a man, and I am hungry. Or I am a man who was hungry. Or I was a man who was thirsty. And so his identity was realized at a very young age as someone who is not rooted in his hunger, someone who is not rooted in his thirst. And I think that can only be further expounded to say that first we need to understand who we are, and the only true identity that we have is as a son of God. I have a friend who, when he gets a name tag, says, hello, my name is, he would write, Patrick, son of God. because his identity was chiefly as a son of God, and then everything else followed from that. And so I think a proper understanding in each of our respective fields as a son of God and noticing others as sons or daughters of God as well is the only real situation to come to an understanding or a solution to that problem.
Right, yeah. Emily.
I think I'm Emily. I study chemical engineering, but I'm not defined by that. but I think a practical for how I root myself in my identity as a daughter of God is every morning I have 20 minutes of kind of like intellectual reading of scriptures or prayer books or Lives of the Saints, that sort of thing. But then I have 10 minutes, I set a timer, and I just rest with the Lord. And I just marvel in the fact that I'm not doing anything and he's loving me. That I don't have to do anything to have him love me. That nothing I can do can make him love me more. And nothing I do can make him love me less. And then that... out of that I don't do in order to gain my identity. And this manifests itself in a joy in my life. So if I fail a test, you know, if the whole class fails a test, which happens often in chemical engineering, and, you know, they seem to notice like, wow, it doesn't seem to be impacting her as much as it is me because it doesn't seem to be taking a toll on who she thinks she is. And so people will notice that and want what I have. And I think that's a great way to evangelize because there's a lot of anxiety, especially in our major of just a lot of mental health issues, actually, because a lot of people putting their identity in how well they're doing. And chemical engineering is super tough. There's no one who gets all A's. So, like, everyone has pretty low self-worth as a, you know, because of that. So it's not good. So being that example, I think, is what I try to do every day.
Oh, that's good. You know, I remember something my father once said to another acquaintance of his, but I and my brother were with my father when he said it. The fellow asked my father, well, what do you do for a living? And my father said, oh, I raise a family. And when the fellow looked at him oddly, he said, oh, you're asking me how I make my money. And that really touched me as a child, that that his vocation was raising a family. So, and it's being and doing. You have to do. I mean, you don't want to become someone who is just waiting for someone to give them a living. You know, St. Paul had to address this problem in Thessalonica. In his first letter, he lays out, this is a principle, if you don't work, you don't eat. because there were a group of people who believed they were more perfect Christians, waiting for the Lord whom they expected momentarily. So they just sat there and waited. And then they got hungry. And then they expected people to feed them. And it caused a problem. But it's that understanding who you are that is so important. Yeah. Caitlin, you had...
So kind of going off the last two points, I'm a sophomore. Oh, I'm Caitlin.
Yeah.
And So when people come up to me and ask me what I want to do, I'm going to say 9 times out of 10, I say I don't know. I'm on a pre-law track, but everything's kind of a mess right now. I don't know exactly where I'm being called. So especially at this point in time where I could have a lot of anxiety about what I want to do and where I want to end up in my life, I have to be really rooted in my Catholic identity. So what I find myself saying, especially like to my church friends, is like, where do you want to be? Like, what do you want to do with your life? And for me, it's I want to be the best Catholic I can be, and I want to be Jesus in disguise. Like, I want to be Jesus to other people. And I think that's where we find a lot of the moral dilemma on campus, is because people don't know Jesus or people deny Jesus. And, like, essentially, especially in political science, I find a lot of people who want to be the good guy. And I'm like, so you do want to be Jesus to other people, but they don't recognize that. They don't know him. So I think, especially at the Newman Center, they really, they help educate us. And they, I've found different ministries at the Newman Center where I realize my identity is in Christ and Christ alone. And I was talking to Tim during the break. This is our last week of classes, and next week is finals week. So this
no
is a big
anxiety
week.
Then, huh?
Right. And he asked me how classes were going, and I said they're going okay. We said at the same time, but we are not defined by our GPA. We are not defined by our grades. Mm-hmm. So I think that's really important, is to just be rooted in Catholic faith, be rooted in your belief, and you'll end up where you need to be.
Right. Yeah. Now, Caitlin, as I remember when you were introducing yourself, you said that you were studying Arabic.
Yes, I do have a minor in the Arabic language.
Right. And you're aware that there are Christians, Catholics, well, they're the Maronite, right?
Yes.
Who speak Arabic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And are very much a part of it, yeah. Have you ever been at a Maronite service?
No. Oh, actually, I have
hear
not.
It.
But I found my passion for Arabic through Catholic Charities in Cleveland, their Migration and Refugee Services.
Oh.
I taught ESL, so as I was teaching refugees English, they were teaching me Arabic. And obviously it was through Catholic Charities, so they taught me some Catholic words in Arabic. So that was really cool, and that's kind of what sparked my interest, both in political science to create policy that can give them back their human dignity that they tend to be stripped of as immigrants and refugees, but also to be able to talk to them about our faith in a common language.
Well, wonderful. And I think it's important for us to realize that in the Catholic Church, there are many, many cultures, but all joined together by the participation in the Eucharist and in the Lord Jesus Christ. It's extraordinary. But how important it is to recognize the humanity of others. And well, let me ask then a related question, and that is the question that arises constantly. The conflict between faith and science. Is there a true conflict, or is it something that covers another reality? Is science by itself, well, I have to say natural science, because actually the term science simply means knowledge. Is there an inherent division and conflict between natural science and religion?
Hi, my name is Andrew Nunsengzi. I'm a chemical engineer, so I guess science is right up my alley.
Right.
I don't think there's any like line that gets drawn between science and like faith, because like in all of my science classes, I see like such true like beauty. There's like so much like greatness that comes from like all this knowledge. Like if the depths of the universe, like God created all this intrinsic beautiful things about the universe, so much complexity that we don't understand, and so beautiful to like start learning about this stuff that God created. And like it's like just something that complements our faith, like, wow, God, you created this. We don't know how you created this, but like we love learning about your wonders and your majesties. So yeah. I don't think there's like any like line that can be drawn.
Right. Yeah.
My name is Jason. I'm a philosophy major, and we actually just talked about this last week in my philosophy of God class. Mm-hmm. And obviously, as a Catholic church, we take the rationalist approach that there's one truth. Science and faith both point towards the same truth. And other things faith can show that science can never reveal. But I think the reason we see so many atheists on a college campus is you see this false war between science and faith. And when you're presented between the two, so many want to hold on to the science because it's empirical. You can see it in front of you, and you can trust it. And so people want to trust that, and they think if you believe science, you can't believe faith. So I think simply having Catholics who study the faith and can come out and talk about how it's reasonable and how they can come together to form one truth, I think that's right along the battle lines of bringing down atheism and showing that our faith is reasonable.
Okay.
Yeah, and just real quick, I'm Matthew, studying neuroscience. When I was learning a lot about how hospitals conduct, how they do their work, and how they look at patients, what was like really cool for me is a lot of questions that they ask patients when they come into hospitals is, do you believe in anything? Do you have any spiritual aspects to yourself? Because they realize like that's an important aspect of humanity. And like I think a huge thing that people are having trouble with is seeing that like faith is not part of, like it's not necessary as what we're saying. But as we can see, like even though there is a distinction between spirituality and religion, like there is, we do need faith to have like a spiritual side of us, and there is a spiritual side of humanity.
Well, you know, it's kind of a two-way street. This is something that Pope Benedict XVI always talked about, that the God whom we worship, the God who created all things, created them as reasonable, that there is a structure of the universe, that we can understand it. It takes investigation, and that investigation is encouraged. But at the same time, By the same token, we have to understand that there are limits on both sides. You know, some people claiming an act of faith refer to it as a blind act of faith. Faith is not blind. Faith is something that is built up through a number of threads. John Henry Newman talked about faith as a cord that is woven from many threads put together, but woven together, it's an extraordinarily strong thing. But people think that if they're individuals of faith, they have to deny scientific investigation. And in the same token, we have to say to scientists, you know, we honor and respect those things that you do within your field, but don't use them to claim something that science is not equipped to answer. Science can tell you how a thing works, but not why. And the Catholic Church has always been interested in the world around them, what it is. St. Thomas Aquinas said, all knowledge begins with what we can see, hear, touch, and feel. But it is a method of going beyond the material into the profoundly spiritual, in the origin of all things that exist. So, but, you know, we still have that difficulty of understanding. Have all of you experienced this, or is it something that is made up by the newspapers but doesn't really exist in the academy? Yeah.
My name is Jason, and as a philosophy major, I often get attacked for my faith. And I think it's something we should encourage for young people to be trained in apologetics and not having watered-down faith, but actually learning it, because often I don't know how to defend it, and I have to go home and study Aquinas or the saints or different teachings. But I often see it taught, exactly as you said, Bishop, as by professors, as you have to take this leap of faith, and it's not rational, and it's something of the past. So I do see that very often on the college campus.
Right.
You know, in my experience, my name is Zach. I'm a public policy major. I've actually experienced a different kind of experience here in college. You know, public policy was defined to us as the intersection of philosophy and action. And so naturally, when we talk about what actions we believe we ought to take, we do speak of our philosophy. And I often bring my faith into it because that's a critical part of my philosophy. And I have never actually received any hostility, neither from academics nor from fellow students. And I think that that really speaks to the fact that, you know, most folks are looking for that deeper meaning. Now, some have found a home in the church or in another denomination or even another faith, and many have not. But I think it's an incredible mistake for our church to speak of things as drawing battle lines and an overemphasis on apologetics. And I believe this going back to the gospel and the greatest commandments, that we shall love the Lord with all our being and our neighbors as ourselves. These are commandments of relationship. And I oftentimes will hear in the church this very disturbing trend of insulting, looking down upon people who are not have not found their home in a particular faith. They may either make the error of calling them an atheist when they are in fact an agnostic, and there is a critical difference. They also may, I've heard this term a lot, spiritual but not religious, even so much so to the point it's abbreviated SBNR. I would argue that far more dangerous is RBNS, the religious but not spiritual. An overemphasis on rationalism and on proving truth to others will not create the faithful, but only in introducing the Lord as the Father, as friend, as God, who loves us so much that he gave his only son to save the world. That's a relationship. And approaching things with this militaristic style is destined to failure. And so, because I have, I found a great deal of life reading Pope Francis's works, particularly The Joy of the Gospel, and his writings on a faith by attraction, in which we focus on ourselves in the way that we resist the allure of sin, particularly and most especially the deadliest of them all, pride. Right. And that can even take the form of pride in our church, as if it's somehow makes us better than other people. Extraordinarily dangerous. Well,
I see your point, and I've often told people that if you explain the faith, and sometimes you're going to be asked. St. Peter told us, "Be always ready to explain the hope that you have." But I think it is important to be able to talk about the faith intelligently. But I tell people, if you're involved in a conversation, remember, your aim is not to score points. It's to change hearts. And one of the ways we do this is by the truth. Well, okay, Matthew, go ahead.
Yeah, I don't want to make us run over. I'm Matthew again. And just running off of Zach, I see it in my own family sometimes where my own family is struggling with their faith because they don't really know what they're believing in. Right. I think it's often that I can even misunderstand the teachings of the church. I can misunderstand the truth that Jesus presented in the new law, the law of love versus the old law in the Old Testament. And I think that's a big thing that Catholics face right now, is just making sure that they understand the law that Jesus gave us versus the law that Moses, and of course it's fulfillment, not abolishing it. It's understanding, it's like through understanding that history and understanding who Jesus really is and our relationship with him, do we fully understand our faith.
Yeah. But remembering that Jesus tells us the truth will set you free. So, well, I thank all of you for joining me on this, and God bless. Do well in your examinations. Remember that in Christ you are never alone. they used to say there are no atheists in foxholes. I don't think there are any in the exam room, really. God bless. Thank you very much.
You have been listening to From the Chair with the Most Reverend Frederick F. Campbell, Bishop of the Diocese of Columbus. From the Chair is a series created by Bishop Campbell in cooperation with St. Gabriel Catholic Radio, so that he might directly speak with his flock to address questions about living the Catholic faith. Join us each Tuesday at 5 p.m. for From the Chair with Bishop Frederick F. Campbell.